Mr. Arthur Thompson, Rail 6. Now, coming back to the working conditions, how many hours is a person expected to work?
Like our normal working days today, you know, when it's daybreak, and then you stop working about 5, if I remember 5. But dinner was quite early, 6 o'clock. At 5 you stop and come back to your hut. You're going to have your bath. By the time you finish, you're settled for dinner, and then your dinner comes in, or supper, I call it.
Have they breaks in between? Are there any breaks in between?
There's a break for lunch, then you go back again and start working. Short break for lunch, maybe half an hour or so, 1 hour. You start early, very early in the morning. But you get up very early in the morning, maybe 6 o'clock, I think, you get up. Quite dark is this, let me get up. Brush your teeth, wash your face and all, get ready for work, and have your breakfast, and off you go.
And what about those people who are working in the camp itself? Do they have the same working conditions too?
All sorts of work there. Those who are doctors and those who are orderlies, they work went about with their job. Those looking after the sick, those looking after the old people. And then again, those who went to the tinsmith shop and they had to do their work. And those who had to work in the kitchen went to the kitchen. And those who had to cut wood, and those who do the charcoal, making of charcoal for the camp use. And see, as I say, the different types of jobs, they each one had his job, knew what he had to do with him.
Now, who were the supervisors for the each type of job?
They were the internees themselves. The Japs never didn't care. Japs only took us out to see that we didn't run away, that's all. That's all. They were more concerned about running out of the camp and escaping the simple all.
Now, what is the relationship like among the people?
We were quite friendly. After dinner, we'll sit down. As I say, the lights will go off and be pretty dark, you know. So we won't go to bed right away. Those who are tired might want to go to bed. And then there'll be fellows who sit down just outside the hut and chit-chat, and we'll pass jokes, you know. We'll have a few jokes. Mm-hmm. And some of them will talk about food. I suppose, you know, that's the time when you talk about food, when you can't get... You say, this is very nice to eat, and that's very nice, and how do you make it, and what do you do? Very often talk about food and what happened before they were interned.
Yeah, I think to be more specific, my question is that, what is the working relationship like among colleagues, you know?
Well, working, as I say, we had different jobs to do. They were fairly... We were very helpful. Each one helped each other. Anything happened to a guy, he got was sick, you know, they'll help him out. You know, we knew that we were all prisoners of war, that's all. And there was no use of us trying to see who was cleverer than the other. I mean, who was the big shot and the small shot like this. We were all equal. And we had to be pally with each other. We were friends. We mixed around very nicely. They come and introduce themselves to you, especially we were new internees at that time. We didn't know this person, that person. He'll come and say, I'm so and so, can I help you? Can I do something for you? You see?
Then, how is the relationship like between the Japanese and the local staff?
The Japanese didn't interfere with the others. Mm. They only spoke to the camp commandant and whoever they had to speak to, the ones at the top who were looking after the camp. Whenever it's necessary, they only came to see that the hospital was going in order, you know, and then they escort you out to see you go and buy your stuff, get your rice rations, lorries that go out, you know, to camp, or buy a gula melaka. That's what they did.
Now, how's the working discipline like, you know? What's the discipline like in the working site?
Well, when they came to work, they carried on the work. We had to dig the ground and plant tapioca. I first started on that. And then, of course, there's a break, tea break. There'll be a tea break, you know. You start working for 2 hours, maybe at 10 o'clock. Fellow will come with a big tub, hot water and a lot of leaves, and it's supposed to be tea. And you'll carry your mugs with you, you know, when you go out to work. That's one thing, you had to have a mug, and you had your identification disc, your number. Each internee had a number, you know, and divided into sections to see a race and a number. So and they, when the chaplain shout, tea up, then everybody puts his changkul down and goes and have, and he goes and helps and serve the tea. That the chap will serve you the tea and with a long ladle and a gayung, a tin at the end, and pours into your tin, your mugs, you know, tin mugs that you had. And you sit down and drink this hot tea and wait for a while. Then the Japanese fellow watching you, he says, okay, looks as what's 50 minutes up, start. And the, your leader will say, okay, chaps, let's start work now. You know, one shout, he gives a shout, and all of them get up and start.
Now, what happened to a person who refuses to work? What will happen to him?
Well, nothing will happen. He stays in camp, he doesn't get his extra rations or so. I mean, he gets his normal rations. Sometimes our hut representatives, and they will see to it, you see why he's not working. Because the whole thing is going on, be controlled by the internees themselves. Where that's concerned, it's internally, you know, no interference with the Japanese. And we had our own way of punishment that I told you, anything was done wrong, stealing and you're caught and so on. The boys also did any mischievous things at night, stealing or being, you know what I mean, being out in certain areas where they're not supposed to go to, out of bounds, then they get tried and rations cut maybe, or punished, being put in the confinement in the room, something like that.
Yeah, to be more specific, if a person is out in the field working and he did not follow instructions, okay, will he be disciplined?
Well, you know, with the Japanese guard watching you, and nobody is going to stop working and stop playing the fool, you know. When time came to work, he had to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Japanese guard could call him up in the greenhouse and, you know, give you a few slaps or punish you for it. No? Then it's going to be worse. If our people catch you and punish you, it's okay. It's our own mm-hmm. internees. But you don't get the Japanese authorities on you, then you've hit it.
Yeah. Have you witnessed any form of Japanese punishment before?
Yeah. In the camp?
I mean, yes, in the camp itself.
Yeah, these two boys who escaped, I told you before, mm-hmm. these two Eurasians. It's like our hut representative was chicken-hearted. Where was the hut representative? I would not say a word. Mm. I would have kept quiet. He was afraid that, you know, thinking of his own skin in case the Japs found out, he kept quiet, he would be getting in trouble. See, mm-hmm. so he went and told the Japanese authorities. So they waited for these two men to come back, you know. And they came back with newspapers from outside. They got some meat, I believe, they bought from outside, and they ate, and they were turned into the greenhouse, we call it greenhouse, and they had a beating. They were walloped. The Japanese had hammered them, I believe.
Now, besides walloping and beatings, what other forms of punishment does the Japanese exercise?
Outside of camp, you mean?
No, inside the camp.
In the camp, there's no other form. If you didn't bow to him, he might give a slap in the face or something, shout at you. But I never seen it. I personally had not witnessed anything like that, you know. Mm-hmm. The internees knew what it was to obey orders, especially when the Japs are around, you know. What you do when you see a Japanese officer passing by the camp, you have to stand attention and say, kioske. That's mm-hmm. in Japanese means attention. Or the whole group of boys or men standing by talking, and a Japanese officer passes, one man must give the order and all of us bow to him. Mm-hmm. That's all. And he passes by. Nothing happens.
Yes. Now, can you make a comparison between the Japanese treatment and the Indians' treatment towards the interns?
They never got into the camp and had nothing to do with this. All they did was to look after the perimeter of the camp and the gates, that's the main gates. They had their quarters outside, you know. They had a quarter of the Sikh or the Malay guards, we call them. They had a kind of a uniform, khaki slacks maybe they had on, in a shirt, a policeman's shirt. And they had a stick. They didn't have any guns with them, and they pointed a piece of iron sticking in the top, you know, like a bayonet mm-hmm. or something. That's all they had. They were supposed to be the guards, camp guards, locals. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Now, were these Indians and Malay guards, were they on friendly relations? Were they on did they have friendly relations with the internees?
No, they didn't have any friendly relations. They were collaborators. They were on the side of the Japs, you know. You know what I mean? You can see from their very attitude, the way they look. There was no way they can talk to them. Or
Now, did you encounter any pleasant experiences during your working life in the camp?
Any special experiences? Well, no.
Or some unpleasant ones?
Well, I tell you what, we had an artist in camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked drawing. Mr. Charlton, his name was. He was an artist by profession. And I used to talk to him in the evening after dinner. You see, it was still bright and nothing to do. I'd take my little stool along with me and go to his hut. And he says, I'll draw a picture of you. And he drew, and I still got it up to today. I have that picture. And he showed me some pictures he drew in the camp. And he had no watercolors and how to get, of course, in those days. And then who would think of bringing those things? So I had some with me, and I gave it to him. And what he did was, he just pounded down, made it a little bit of a, you know, made it, it was hard, very, very hard. So he pounded it and made it of a soft flour, like, and mixed with water and did some painting. And then I met some of our friends that we knew. We should sit down and talk what happened outside while they were inside, you know. And they would tell us what happened inside when I was outside at that time. That's what we would do. We'd talk and chit-chat. And I knew some cooking. And somebody would be interested in getting some mess recipes from me. I'd sit down and give him some, you know, recipes. Tell him what to do. So that's when we go out of camp, how we're going to cook. And food was a very interesting topic then those days. What they want to do when they go to camp, what they'll buy, what they do, and things. They talk about food, you know. Because you're hungry then at time. You'll talk about things, but you talk about food, you know. What else to talk about?
Now, did you observe any unpleasant scene during work?
No, there wasn't anything unpleasant. There were some people who committed offenses fighting and all that in camp. Yes, I did see somebody fighting in the camp and being charged later. And the chaps who were, you know, as you know, we didn't have any, the men and women couldn't mix, you know, and so the men had, you know what I mean, offenses they committed between men and men, you know, once there was a case like that. And he was being charged also, and the name being mentioned, that's not too good also, you know, see, it's a slur and bad, shameful.
You were mentioning about what the men were doing, the different types of job that the men did. What about the ladies? What kind of jobs did they do?
Oh, the ladies, the poor ladies they didn't have much of a, you know, the ladies will have just the brassieres and the panties, you know, and work that way, you know, honestly. Because I wanted to see what the ladies were doing when I went in the ladies' camp. But we had to guard, of course, to do some work in the ladies' camp.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to go in. I was curious, you know, so I went in the camp to see what they were doing. And they had to clean up the big drains and plant, do some work as well, ladies. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
And they were in shorts, some of them panties, and just brassieres, working out in the sun, digging the drains. And they planted something, tapioca as well, whatever they could do, and some vegetables themselves. You understand? They had some work to do too. Ladies had their camp to themselves, and there was just no fence. That's a natural boundary, and there were big trees, and you know, and we had an orchard that separated the men from the lady. And the ladies, the ladies should not have had to do this work. That's why when the British authorities landed in Singapore, they made them pose, you know, in their panties and brassieres, and over the big drain working. Just to get pictures of what happened, what they actually did. This was taken up as evidence against the Japanese. I'm coming to that later. The Japanese were being prosecuted later in a war crimes trial.
What do people do during the free time?
Well, during the free time, we had concerts, no? And these concerts were on a Sunday. And that's something they look forward to after a week's work, huh? We had as I told you before, I think, the circus people, they were interned. They couldn't get away in time when the war broke out. And these were Polish. Well, one chap by the name of Sladek, he was very good. He kept us amused most of the time. A professional clown, no? And he will have his jokes and crack his jokes and all that. And then we had another fellow who was very good at the piano. He used to play at Raffles Hotel, pianist. We had a piano in camp. And that piano was being shifted for about whenever you wanted this. They put the piano on a kind of a cart with two wheels, huh? And push it right round to the orchard where the concert would be held. And then sometimes in the women's camp they had a concert. The piano would be pushed over there when the concert would be held in the women's camp. And that would be done by the wrestler. He's a very strong fellow, the wrestler we had. He'll help to carry this piano and push the cart with it. And then again, we had Grobels, the man who did the stunts, you know, in the concert, in the circus. And we had one of the Empress of Asia boys, you know, from the ship that sunk. He was very good in the Russian dance. He could do the Russian dance, you know, this very Russian dance where they throw a knife in the center and they dance around. And as he's dancing, he says 150 grams. You know, rice means to say, I'm not getting enough to eat, I can't, you know, it's a joke, I can't sort of carry on. And another very good entertainer there was a man who was, you know, what they call it, ventriloquist. You know, ventriloquist. We had a ventriloquist in camp. I knew him personally. He was good. He had this MacArthur doll leg. He used to talk to a doll, and he entertained us. And we had a violinist who played a violin. And you'd be interested to know this part of it. When the end came, we had these four musicians who played in Raffles Hotel. They went to Radio Singapore. At that time, it was the Cathay, and we had a radio in camp, and we listened to them playing, you know, over the radio to Singapore, you know, for the people in Singapore. And that's where the recreation was concerned. Where other games were concerned, like playing football, I think we didn't have that. And some of the men brought in their playing cards. We'll sit on the table, little table, they could erect a little table, and they'll sit around and play cards, maybe poker, game of poker and things like that. And those who brought in other games, snakes and ladders, what is the children who managed to bring these into the camp, they've played those games. No other games.
Now, coming back to the concert, were they held separately?
Yeah, a concert in men's camp, we'll see that for the men, you see. Then they'll have to go to the ladies' camp, and they'll bring the piano there, and all those who are taking part in the concert will go in the ladies' camp, and the ladies will have to see this concert and be able to see the concert. And after they come back to the men's camp, bring the piano back and push it into the store, wherever it was being kept.
How did they manage to shift the piano here?
As I said, we had a cart, you know, with two wheels, you know, the cart, you know what I mean to say, something like a bullock cart, you know. Of course, the person who took the place of the bulls was the wrestler in front. And it's difficult to cart it, especially going down the hill, up the hill. You understand, you need all the strength and all the people to push, you know. The roads weren't straight like an ordinary flat, both were not level. Sometimes you go up and then downwards.
Now, did the lady participate in the concerts also?
No, ladies never participated in the concerts. Just the men only. They were not allowed to. Maybe they were not allowed to, but they never participated in the concerts. So the men.
Now, besides the professional artists appearing in the concerts, did any of the laymen participate in the concert also with their own items?
Some of the men participated in the concert. Now, there was one chap who was very, very good for composing songs. You know what I mean? He was very good, and he would give us some of his jokes. And one concert, you know, they had a song which had a double meaning. It meant that the Japanese didn't understand what it meant, but we knew what it was. It means to say there was one more river to cross, you know, the river of Jordan. And the boys and all were singing repeating it in the camp. It meant to say that the British were coming in. One more river was there. They were in Rangoon in Burma, and that was Malaysia. Malaya was known as Malaya before, and cross Malaya comes Singapore. So it means one more river to cross. You understand? That's what they meant.
Yes, Professor, you mentioned about radio that you were able to hear your fellow inmates playing over at Radio Singapore.
Radio Singapore, that was at Cathay at the time.
Now, how did you manage to get the radio?
Oh, that was, I don't know how they managed to get it, but they got one radio, one set and brought in the camp. And we sat around and listened to it, a few sets. That was just after the Japs had surrendered, you know, when the British had gone in Singapore.
I mean, that was after the...
That was after the internment. But we were still in camp. We couldn't go out, you know, the camp. Many people had to be looked after. They had to see to them. Those who, sailors, were given their sailor's outfit and they wanted to be repatriated back to England. And those who had to go back to Australia. And those Americans wanted to go back to America. And those who wanted to be treated, they were sick, had to be sent to hospital, you know. That was in Bombay. I think they had a hospital there ready for them. They were very sick cases. Had to be flown out of Singapore. And like myself, I had a home here, and there's no point to me giving my name to be repatriated elsewhere, since I'm a domiciled person, domiciled in Singapore.
Now, the ladies and the men mixed together. Did they ever mix together?
No, while they were in camp, mm-hmm. During the occupation, when they were interned, they were separated, huh? But after the British had come back, then they could go and stay with the men. They had to come to the men's hut and mix around. But there's no privacy, you know what I mean? The huts are all open, how could they possibly think?
Yeah, but were they given opportunities to meet one another?
Yes, that was. They had the opportunity. That was allowed by the Japs, the administration. And that was only on Sunday, once a week. Of course, you must have somebody. If you didn't have anybody, it's hard to come across, you know. You understand? And you had to get a pass, like, you know, to say that you have your mother there. Okay, you can go and see your mother. My mother was in camp. Myself, my two brothers will meet my mother in camp. And I had a sister, an adopted Chinese girl. Mm. She didn't want to go anywhere. She says, that's my mother. She's all the time. So the judge brought her in, you see. Then those are brothers and sisters, brothers on one side, sisters on the other side, and husbands and wives, you know, can meet, you see. Friends are difficult for friends to meet. How do you want to meet friends, like, is it?
Yeah, where did...
And they met in the orchard. There was a separation between the men's camp and the ladies' camp. Mm-hmm. You know, when I said that was the boundary. Mm. That orchard separated us. There's some big trees all around. And it's nice... It deserves the name of orchard anyway. The nice plants growing around. And we could sit under a tree. We brought little movable stools. Brought some stools with us so we could sit down and see. And the clown was comical. He will sit one side, his wife sits on the other side, and he puts a plank like all the way, and that's his table. He puts his strings on top and chit-chats, you know. And the ladies will go back. When it's time up, you know, for them to go up, the ladies will walk back, mm-hmm. You know, they kiss each other and wish each other good night, good goodbye. Mm-hmm. And the ladies go back to their camp, and the men will go back this way. But you can see the ladies. The whole week you can see them, yes. From the men's camp, where my hut was, I can look across, I can see them. I see them walking about and going to the bathroom, coming out and having, you know what I say? Mm-hmm. Collecting their rations and all that. You could see them. But you couldn't sort of go in and talk to them, you know? You see them far away. You can make signs like that when you want to, you see?
How long were they given to talk to one another at the orchard?
I think it was 1 hour, I think. I think it was an hour, if I remember. 1 hour. It was... From 4 to 5, because 5 we come back and the dinner was, maybe 4:30 to 5:30, we come back and dinner was 5:30 at 6 o'clock.
And were they being watched also?
No, nobody watched you. The Japs didn't interfere, there were no guards, the guards were on outside.
Now, in the camp itself, were people allowed to have freedom of worship?
Yes, they had freedom of worship. You see the Salvation Army, he will sit outside, you know, in a little square patch, like, and he will conduct his services. And the Catholics, we had our Redemptorist priest, we had our priest there, they will conduct the services. And the service will be held in the open, you know, maybe under a cherry tree, you know, a square patch of ground, like, and the internees will all be standing. If you had a stool, you could sit down, you all have to stand. And it's funny to see the service going on because most of them bare body, the shorts on, you know, and he's conducting the service, the priest, and giving a sermon. And I remember being in camp when it was Easter Sunday, and it was pretty sad, the sermon he gave, you know. And one occasion, the whole altar collapsed, you know. A gust of wind came and collapsed, and some of the internees said, well, that's a sign, looks like the end is coming, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And true enough, it wasn't very long after that when the war came to an end. And then we had the Methodists, they had their little own service of their own. Those who were Methodists wanted to go and attend that service, they could. Those who were Catholics went to attend the Catholic services. The ladies, they had their freedom of worship just as much as well as the men. And they couldn't come over to the men's camp. The priests will go over to the ladies' camp, and then they'll have their worship there. Prayers being said, those are the prayer books and so on, they brought them up. The Methodists had their section, Seventh-day Adventists. I don't know if there were Seventh-day Adventists. I know there was a Salvation Army. I've seen that. He had his full outfit, you know, Salvation Army. And then we had the Wesley Church, maybe, it's a, things like that, Protestant. We had a Protestant Church of England also.
Yes. How was the funeral service conducted?
Yeah. That part of it, you know, when someone dies, they used to bury the person outside the camp, like Bidadari Cemetery, if you could. So, towards the end, the last 3 months, things were getting very bad and war was coming. You know, they were fighting in Burma, I suppose, and all that, getting closer. They were afraid of internees going out of camp, or getting news, maybe, or something like that. So they had to be buried in the camp itself. There was a land in the camp set aside for graves to be dug, you know, for the internees there. I remember one lady, a friend of my mother's, she died. And another person, another woman died also. And one morning they were shouting, you know, she went to hospital nearby, and the people were shouting and screaming and crying, their hearts off. Very sad that was. And they couldn't go out to bury this person, they had to bury in camp. Only three people, then the end came when they surrendered.